Hello, my name is Kate Loveman. I'm a researcher at the University of Leicester, where I work on literature in the 17th and the 18th centuries. And I particularly work on Samuel Pepys, who wrote a diary in the 1660s in the reign of Charles II. I'm the lead investigator for a project on Pepys's diary, which is called Reimagining the Restoration, and which investigates historical fiction, which is written about the 17th and the 18th centuries. Today, I'm talking to Katherine Johnson, an award-winning author of books for young adults and children. Many of Katherine's books are historical novels, which are set in the 18th and the 19th centuries, and they feature the adventures of young people who are Black or of mixed heritage. To give you just a few examples of her acclaimed work, Sawbones is a murder mystery in which Ezra McAdams, who is an apprentice anatomist, encounters magicians and body snatchers in late 18th century London. The Curious Tale of the Lady Caribou is based on a real-life news sensation from 1817, when Mary Wilcox, who was from Devon, tricked high society into believing that she was a princess from the East Indies. That novel was shortlisted for the Bookseller YA Prize and nominated for the Carnegie Prize. And most recently, Katherine has published Queen of Freedom, which is about Queen Nanny, who was a real but also legendary figure in the fight against the British in 1720s Jamaica. As I said, these are just a few examples from a wealth of fascinating and complex stories, which I've been really enjoying reading lately. So, Katherine, could you tell us how you first started writing?
Oh, I've been writing for 30 years. Actually, next year it'll be 30 years since I was first published. And I didn't start, I've started writing for teenagers, and I wasn't writing historical fiction. I was just writing contemporary fiction. When I started writing historical fiction, which was probably 20 years ago, and the first book I wrote set in the past was set in the 1812. So even though I didn't know at the time, it was the long 18th century, which from talking to historians, I now know that's what it's called. But the reason why I started writing historical fiction was because I read a copy, and this is like 20 years ago, of Peter Fryer's Staying Power. And I'd never read a book like that. You know, it was sort of a very important, I think, forerunner of David Oleshugar's Black and British book. And I think it's very important for this generation. You know, my parents' generation or my father's generation, which was the Windrush generation, even though my dad came here before the Windrush, who were very much, they were West Indians. And although they had been told that they were British West Indians. But people like me, who are born here, this is the only home you have. You go to the where you, wherever it is your parents come from, and whatever your skin colour, it is just obvious the minute you open your mouth, your mannerisms, you are not from there. So you are from here. And it was making me realise that people like me had been from here for hundreds of years. And I really didn't know. My view of British history was like a Quality Street chocolate lid. You know, you've got the lady, you've got the man with the hat. And definitely we did not figure. And it was hard because I grew up with on the telly, although I did read, I'm really a child of the telly. I'm the child of the 70s who watched lots of telly. And I loved the historical dramas. I loved the outfits. They had, you know, Leon Garfield, family adaptations. I'm not talking about Pride and Prejudice or the older stuff. I'm talking about it was child-centred. It was Sunday afternoon, family. And I wanted, we'd play stuff at school that had been on the telly. And very often it was like, oh, you know, you can't be somebody who's wearing a dress. That was it, really. I wanted to imagine me in a frock. I wanted to say that this is my country and people like me have been here. So I had a very, but obviously it was what got me was the lives that these people had and imagining the lives that these people had, and wanting to share the enthusiasm of finding stuff out. And the more you get into historical fiction, especially when you're writing for children, it's life and death. It's, mm-hmm. you know, in a way that stories that happen nowadays in Britain are usually not. So there's opportunities for a lot of drama.
You mentioned the term the long 18th century, which it's a strange term, which, as you say, sort of historians use. It kind of covers the period from about 1660 to early 19th century.
I've heard of Victoria, isn't it, when Victoria comes to the throne?
Sometimes sort of 1832. It takes well into the 19th century. Uh-huh. Is there a particular appeal of writing about that period for you?
Well, it's partly the wealth of experience of Black Britons at the time. The minute the laws about the end of slavery came in fact, there was a lot less toing and froing. There are a load of different ranges of experiences to explore. It's not about enslavement, it's a range of experiences. The vast majority, I think there's only one book I have written in which someone does begin their life enslaved, out of all the historical fiction I have written. So, you know, obviously it's massive and it's an important part of how one is perceived, not necessarily in Britain, because slavery wasn't something that was seen to happen in Britain. It was something that happened far away, you know? And it's just so interesting for me. And it's not Black history, it's all of our histories. It was the engine of the Industrial Revolution, the capital that was produced, and then the experience, and then the meeting point and the melting point of all the different people within the island of Britain. And I think we ignore it. It's like a sort of amnesia.
One of the things that I found really exciting about your work was the kinds of communities that you develop, and often they sort of develop across the course of the novels. So Nest of Vipers, for example, has a range of young characters in it. This is a novel about a group of largely sort of teenage and young people who are thieves in the early 18th century. And the hero is Cato Hopkins, but he's accompanied by a whole range of different people, some of whom are young women who are good at pretending to be aristocracy. He encounters a young man who is a prince from Africa who's been at boarding school, I think, if I remember rightly, and has run away. So that's just one example of kind of ways that they're about, not just about race, but about class and about a range of people finding their feet.
It's always about class. It's never just about race. This is British history you're talking about, and really class, because there are circumstances, and this is the thing when you look at, I had a TV job which was looking at Miranda Kaufman's Black Tudors and doing an adaptation, a dramatic thing. And you look at pre-industrial slavery race relations, when it was other, and race did not determine your class, you know, it's always going to be class with British history. It's so important. And that working class alliances between, you know, marginalised, the marginalised, which even in my parents' own experience, you know, 50, 60 years ago, was very much working classes. I mean, then you go further back, the Battle of Cable Street in the 30s. It's about the coming together of marginals, you know, the Jews and the Irish dockers together, and realizing that actually they've got more in common.
It was, can I ask you about The Lady Caribou? Because that was one that particularly struck me, that it was very carefully structured in a lot of ways. As I mentioned at the start, based on the real life story of Mary Wilcox, but you have a number of viewpoint characters there, where you have Mary Wilcox, whose view is the sort of the main protagonist, but also Cassandra, who is introduced early in the narrative, who is your sort of typical, I'm not sure, typical inverted commas, early 19th century country house, young, well brought up young woman. And her brother, who starts the novel with very misogynistic views, and kind of he develops the character. Mm-hmm. But I was interested in the kind of ways the characters bounced off each other in that novel. So Cassandra really doesn't undergo that much of a character change. She continues to be somebody who is sort of interested in marriage and hasn't really developed much self-reflection. And Caribou, who is sort of creating her narrative as a sort of young working-class woman. Yeah. But she's able to pass off some of her essentially skills she'd learned from living in Devon, hunting, as being exotic royal skills from the West Indies.
But it's also about, I mean, what that book, actually, that has a direct relationship, although there were lots of books in between. So I wrote Nest of Vipers, and then I did a short non-fiction book with the research, which was about confidence tricksters for a small children's publisher. Mm. And they were doing publicity for that book, and they said, Who's your favourite female confidence trickster from history? And I was like, oh, my God. And then it took me years to write that book because it is based on reality, because I had to sort of squidge it into a narrative format, because it's not, it's a lot of the characters are real. Cassandra is not real. Yeah. A lot of the other characters are real. But it's that thing where people want to believe something, and people want to believe things about themselves and about other people. And growing up in London, especially when you are indeterminately brown, I mean, my hair's grey now, but I did have black hair, and I was, a lot of people project onto you whatever they want you to be. You know, oh, you're from Tahiti, you're from North Africa, you're Egyptian, you're South American, you're Israeli. And, you know, it is that thing when one is mixed race, there are times, and that, you know, there's the old trope about being mixed race, you're not one thing or the other, therefore you are a liar, because your appearance is lying, because it doesn't necessarily say, oh, this is a black person I'm encountering, therefore I will, you know. So it was a lot about that, and Caribou just took a long time, because I knew I wanted to write the story, but I didn't know how to approach it. So I kept trying different points of view, you know, and in the end I had to write it that way because I couldn't get it out any other way.
There's some great reflection in that novel, some comments that the characters make about the power of fiction to improve on truth, to be less ugly, I think one of them says, than truth, but also to sort of create truth. Mm-hmm. So Caribou feels that this character she has created, that she's living, is in some ways more true to herself than the oppressed life. She's in your story, she suffered the birth of a stillborn child. She suffered a sexual assault. Yeah. So she's escaping into a fictional world, but she finds it more true. Could you say a bit more about what you think historical fiction can do that history can't?
Well, I think we love a story, and well, most people love a story. History for children, for young people, has been made a lot more palatable than it was in my day. Not, I don't mean palatable, because it's fascinating, it's wonderful, and I love it. But I don't even have a history O level, because I had the worst mark in my whole class, because we were writing essays on the Corn Laws and, you know, reform, the 1840 Reform Bill. And I was not very good at essays. I think if I'd have had horrible histories, I'd probably be a lot more. Because what is interesting is people. What is interesting is what would I have done? How would I have lived? What was it like? What was it like to have so little choices? How would I have managed? How would I have survived? How would I have lived? What would I have, all those, it's a way of exploring those questions. Because obviously, the one thing that a writer, that anybody, actually not just writers, know, is that fundamentally people are very similar. You know, the absolute base wanting, interaction, childbirth, death, all those things. We're fundamentally the same. We cannot imagine, you know, we don't know what people said to each other. We don't know the exact words they used, but it's really nice to explore those things. That's what you want historical fiction for.
Do you have a sort of method for going about finding things? Do you usually get drawn into stories or to the historical stories in particular ways?
It's cumulative usually. So, you know, Nest of Vipers, there's a direct line to Caribou. Sawbones, in the intermediate period, what happened was I went to a museum. I went to, you know, you're a London, well, I'm not a Londoner now, but I was a Londoner. And I went to, I'd never been to the Hunterian Museum. And it's the collection of John and William Hunter, who were anatomists in the 18th century. They set up the Royal College of Surgeons. And there's all things in jars. And there was a big tumour. And the writing, you know, copyright says, tumour cut off the face of a boy in St Kitts. And I thought, oh, who was that boy? What that? And then, you know, that came. So Sawbones was just like, it took me like 6 weeks to write the rough draft. I got totally sucked in.
Do you go to historians or do you go to novels of the period or sort of
I go to maps a lot. Ah. I have some lovely, lovely maps, which, you know, they're like the, I think they came from the Museum of London Archive or something. Obviously, I try my hardest to make sure things are right. Sometimes there are things that are wrong. And, you know, I wanted to have a letterbox in Sawbones, and letterboxes were in some houses in London in the 1790s, but they weren't universal. But I just thought, you know what? He's having a letterbox. I am not a historian. I'm not an academic. I read a lot. If it's easy, because I'm not an academic. This is what put me off academia, I think, when I was younger. The fact that a lot of books, I think a lot of things, are written because they're an academic paper. So they're written in language which is not accessible. And part of the thing that you do if you're writing for young people is to make that language accessible. That is your raison d'etre.
You mentioned language a minute ago. Is language something that is particularly tricky to
negotiate?
Yeah, I mean,
I think I wrote Nest of Vipers a long time ago. And I think the language, I think there's a bit of a chasm between the language and the readership, because it's not really heavy on the 18th century and, you know, but I think there's quite a rhythm of it. And so you do need to be quite a good reader. But it's because it's so rich and lovely, that language, you know, is so lovely. Yes. And I think it was easier, obviously, with Sawbones, because Ezra was educated anyway. He was not, you know, from a different milieu. But it's what you do when you're writing a character. You inhabit that character, that whole culture.
I think it's a period where we've got suddenly a lot more information on people who are not gentry and middle class, and that's partly because the number of people who can read has increased, and so the number of people who can write has also increased,
and the money that has come into the country that is making this which made London a place where, you know, Tudor times was much more buttoned up compared with the 18th century, where you're like, you know, life's short, life's exciting, you know, you've got a chance to make some money or not, or live or die. Everything is, it's very vital. I mean, not to say it's not awful and terrible, and I wouldn't want to live there, but, you know, it's full of stories.
Yeah, it is. Do you feel a responsibility when you're writing about characters who are real? To them,
I think you do. I think less so when they're completely not alive, but still, I mean, you know, obviously the nanny thing is different because there's so little that's written about her, absolutely so little that you've got to make stuff up, you know. And half the stuff that's known about her is absolutely ridiculous. But then again, you know, you think of all the books there are about Robin Hood, and it's similar. It's that territory. But I did a short bio of Thomas Alexander Dumas, who was Dumas Pere's father, writer, father of the writer. And, it's very important that you get things right. Caribou, yes, but no. I was writing, I wanted to be true to the spirit of her. And you're not going to go completely off piste, but you have got to make fiction is a different beast. If you're writing something that is fictional, it is going to be arranged, it's going to be formed in a particular sort of way, because that's what we demand of fiction. And I think most readers are aware of that.
Yes, and you get at the end of historical novels very often the sort of notes that separate out the fiction and the fact as we know it. And as you mentioned, sometimes, like with Nanny and Queen of Freedom, the Jamaican freedom fighter, there is very
Absolutely.
little that, but also quite deeply felt views about how people should be portrayed are going around. Because you handle some quite difficult subject matter. So I mentioned there's quite a lot of misogyny and sort of in Princess Caribou, that's one of the viewpoint characters who becomes a sort of ally of Caribou, starts off as a young man of privilege, and the first time we see him, he's in a brothel. And you said a bit earlier that only one of your characters actually begins the narrative enslaved. So I wonder if there's sort of decisions that you make about how to leave material out or to keep it on the edges of the story you're telling, or how to foreground it, that you could say a bit about sort of handling the very difficult subjects that kind of come up.
The most important thing is the story. And it's like, what are you saying about these people? And I wanted him to be horrible. And what's the most horrible thing that he could, and show something. It's also showing how women were thought of as the at the time, again, and how little power women had at the time. Was that, and it was a truth that if you were a wealthy man, you could have mistresses and who did mean nothing to you and were like disposable, like shoes or a coat. So, you've got to illustrate those things in a way that is accessible and clear. It's important that people realize what a debt this country, we, me included, owes to that, the labor, the kidnap and labor of all those people, because that made it possible for us to have lovely roads and lovely houses and flushing toilets and all that kind of stuff. So, to not look at it, it's very funny, it's the sort of stuff that my dad would go on about all the time in my house as a child. But I did get it, the English learned to oppress from practicing on the Welsh and the Irish, which is the other part of my heritage, it was. And so that's what they had in common. But it is that, you need to know these things because it's so important. And then it makes sense of why we are where we are now. How did we get to suck all this produce and people, which was fabulous, from all over the world into our country, which made this country interesting and vibrant and different? And especially now we're at a period where the walls are going up.
Do you have any particular tips for people who are writing historic or wanting to
Well,
write
it's the
historical
story
fiction?
first, then the research. I think people can just do research and do research and do research. I'd say start writing, and when you find gaps in your knowledge, then do the research, because otherwise you'll never stop. The most important thing is the story, I think. You're entertaining yourself, first of all. You're entertaining yourself, and it's got to be whatever it made you want to write that story. Whatever fired you up about that circumstance, those characters, that's what's got to take you through, really. Nowadays, I think there's such a lot of focus on, apart from the Tudors and the Victorians, World War One and World War Two, and that really is this blanket of what is offered. Because I think readers, young and old readers, are open-minded. It's what's put in front of them and what people think is appropriate. And, you know, it's much better to read a book that is on the national curriculum where you might get some knowledge about the time rather than not. So the sensible thing, if you want to write historical fiction, first of all, yes, know where. Those are just jumping off points, really. There are points in Nest of Vipers that it wasn't later in the century because of certain laws. So there were reasons for it being then. Likewise with Sawbones, there were reasons for it being then because of what was going on in scientific whatevery and before laws changed. And Caribou, I moved it, I think, a year later because I wanted Frankenstein to have been published.
I was going to ask you, actually, this was on my list of questions about had it been moved because of Frankenstein?
That would be very good. Yes!
So it's the events is 1817 that you're describing, but it's because one of the characters, Cassandra, at least, has read Frankenstein. And that is sort of a novel about the creation of identity.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is an example of how people might slightly adjust the circumstances for literary reasons.
Well, it is. It's to make it into a novel. It's like the reason why one of the questions I am asked about Caribou is, why have you got that assault at the front there? And the reason I have is because it's standing in for 10 years of trauma. Mm-hmm. I am packaging 10 years of trauma into one act so that the reader can see why she does what she does, you know, without writing a big, this happened. And so that was the point of it, you know. When you write something like that, you need to know what's happening, but without it being a gratuitous thing, because the act in itself is not what is important. It's her change. You know,
yes,
what's important, her running away psychologically from that act. Mm-hmm. So
I think what you were saying about sort of the telling the stories, and your novels quite often start at points where people are having a dramatic switch in their life. So Cato from Nest of Vipers is narrating his life to a chaplain in Newgate because he's facing execution, which is a very 18th century kind of thief thing to do. Caribou is escaping a series of traumas, and that's one of the reasons she's creating her narrative. And Nat in Freedom, which is a novel we've not mentioned, about a young boy who comes to London, who is enslaved, and his attempt to find freedom. That novel starts just at the point that his mother and his sister are sold. So we never get to meet them, but we're getting his response to losing them as part of the story. So
that's classic storytelling. That's what, you know, it's storytelling 101, isn't it? You know, I mean, I don't mean to sound cynical, but you have to, especially if you're writing for young people, you have to engage the reader right away. If you are somebody who they know and they are fans of yours, and you can have a big long rambling start. But if they've just picked that book up off the shelf, that's how it goes.
And interesting is the story that is the story and not the history.
Yeah.
If
you
is a good tip. I'm going to draw us to a close here, but it's been absolutely fascinating to talk to you, and I know I've learned a lot. I hope the people who are listening have enjoyed hearing this, and thank you very much.
Thank you.